Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 2 of Podding on the Ritz with me, Haddy Fraser.
And myself, Ross Noble.
Thank you very much for the lovely responses to episode 1, Ross.
Yeah.
We were tickled, weren't we,
yeah,
to see
we
a lot
really
of the
were. Yeah.
Lovely responses on Twitter and whatnot.
Yeah, people who love the theatre, love the West End.
Love comedy.
And just love
life.
Love
Milton Keynes.
Oh, Milton Keynes, very much.
Which reminds me, my favourite tweet, I think, actually was from, let me just find it here, Charlotte Burton. At
yep.
Sharper LX.
Yep.
Brilliant new podcast. Thank you very much.
Lovely.
Podding on the Wrist by Hadley Fraser and Real Ross Noble. I saw Starlight Express in Milton Keynes when I was 11 and until now thought that they just changed the name for each place on the tour.
Wow.
That would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
That's a nice touch there.
Mind you, what if you were in somewhere with a really long place name, like that place in Wales?
Flabag and Gwynedd, Camargan and Glaveston and Yoth and Gogogogogog.
Is that... No, you didn't do that properly.
Flabag and Gwynedd, Camargan and Glaveston, Yoth and Gogogogog.
Apparently they changed it later on in the production to The Prince of Wales.
What?
It's not as good, is it?
Or are you sure you didn't hear a rumour that the actual Prince of Wales took a wrong turn at the... he went to a gala premiere. He's walked through the wrong door.
And he's found himself on stage.
He's on.
Do you know, he came to see a show I did once.
No.
Yeah.
Be of yourself.
He came to... And he said
this
to me...
This is just the introduction.
I know. So he came to see a show that I was doing. It was quite a short-lived show. It was called The Far Pavilion, set in India. And he... Not long been together with Camilla, I don't think. That's just a bit of an aside. But anyway, Prince Charles came to see the show and he met us all. It was a gala performance. He came up on stage afterwards and shook us all by the hand. And he came up to me, shook my hand and went, "How do you remember all those words?"
Wow.
And I wanted to say to him, "It's my job." "It's my job, Charlie boy." I didn't know. I think I just said... one of those things, isn't it?
there
you are.
I wasn't sure it was him, but I sat in the same row as him, myself and my mate. In fact, it was the producer's, Mel Brooks's, first musical.
At this Royal Drury Lane?
That's right. And we were sat in the Royal... But weirdly, he wasn't in the Royal Box. He was in the front row of the upper circle, which I thought was odd.
Front row of the upper circle?
No, no, the
dress circle.
Dress circle,
yeah.
Yes.
So I was going to say,
yeah.
Not with the oinks.
Yeah, yeah. Restricted view.
Behind a pillar.
It was for the fella behind you with every ears. Hey, satire. No. So me and my mate were sat along from him, and that was the night Nathan Lane did his back in, and they announced it was the understudy, and I swear he tottered.
Did he?
I swear he... Voilà.
Rotter.
Yeah. Anyway, what's coming up in this episode?
Coming up in this episode... So we recorded this episode at the beginning of November. We were about 50 shows in. I think we'd done about 52 performances, but we still hadn't decided on a name by then.
That's right, yeah.
So apologies if we sort of faff around with the name a little bit. But coming up, we've got your journey from, can we call you TV funny man, to humble song and dance maestro.
Yeah, maestro, I'll go with that.
Would that be all right?
Yeah, that'll do, yeah.
We've got some more chat about the snow globes and also...
Oh, yes, of course.
We go on a quest.
Yes.
To go and find the snow globes.
Yeah.
So you'll hear that a little bit later on in the episode. We talk a little bit about some other musical theatre merchandise, I think.
Musical of the Week.
Musical of the Week is an absolute banger. It's only Barry Manilow's Copacabana.
Oh, it's got everything. This episode has literally got everything.
It's jam-packed full of everything.
Yeah. Right, enjoy. The pair that we died for is Frankenstein and Igor. For the first time,
together again. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 2.
Of the show that doesn't actually have a name yet.
Yet, yeah. Maybe we will do at some point. We've done 52 performances of Young Frankenstein at the Garrick, Ross?
Yeah, that has a name.
That has a name. What, the show?
Yes.
Yeah, Young Frankenstein for that.
Yeah, the podcast doesn't have a name yet, but yeah.
Do you think like the gentrification of coffee shops, whereby now they don't have the name of the coffee shop, it's just like a
do you think that'll
end up happening to shows?
I think so.
Yeah. It'll become so hipster that you won't know what you're going in to see. You'll just go into the theatre and
it'll just have like whoever the star is, just their eye.
Yeah.
It's like that. And you have to, and the only people who specifically book will be optometrists who come along. Who's in that one? Oh, it's Judi Dench.
She's incredible. When we were doing Winter's Tale, she came in one day and we went,
hang on a second.
Eh?
Just what?
What do you mean?
Just, oh yeah, you've been in the Shakespeare.
I've been in two plays with Judi Dench.
Have you really?
Yeah. Anyway, one of them, Winter's Tale. Yes. Yeah, that's a real name drop, isn't it?
It's good, I like it.
I suppose so. She came in one day and we went, hi Jude, how's your weekend? She went, yeah, all right, I got a tattoo.
What?
It was my 81st birthday.
Wow.
Can you imagine getting a tattoo on your 81st birthday? She got Carpe Diem tattooed on her wrist.
Wow.
Yeah. She's brilliant.
Excellent. She got me a cup of tea once.
Did she?
Yeah.
Did you ask for it? Or she just sort of turned up out of nowhere?
She turned up at the BBC. Welcome to two old showbiz name droppers. I don't really drink tea. I have a herbal now and again.
Three ginger.
Here's a question, though. Apples, are they the only fruit that can be scrumped?
I should think pears can be as well.
Anything that you can make into a cider can be scrumped. If you stole cider from a popular West End bar, could you claim when the police tried to arrest you, instead of it was theft, you could just say you were scrumping?
Yeah.
It's worse. We should have a section on this show where we get two West End beat cops.
Yeah.
And then ask them questions like that
about potential West End crimes.
West End crimes. In fact, that would be an why don't we write a TV series? When we finish this show, we should be a couple of cops who and then
theatre police
have to go undercover in different shows. And then the end of each
top of the bill.
Top of the bill.
Come on, it writes itself.
Yeah, copyright, nobody nicked that. on the bill. And then top of the bill. And then each show we solve a crime.
Yeah.
And then
celebrates it in musical form.
Yeah, we do is.
Or we go on and do. Are we in a show at the same time?
Oh,
you know, are we sort of part cops, part actors?
This, don't nick this. This, I don't want to put this out. This is too good an idea. This is perfect.
Anyways,
Sunday night, because they had.
Jonathan Creek. It's a bit Jonathan Creek, isn't it?
Yeah, but he was a magician's assistant, wasn't he? He was he made the tricks. He wasn't the.
He solved crimes and then did a magic show, didn't he?
No, he didn't do the magic.
Did he not?
He just built the boxes.
Anyways, yeah. 52 shows in.
52 shows in. Young Frankenstein, that's the show that we're in.
How do you feel it's going so far?
I'm enjoying it.
Are you still?
Yeah. You said it like you were. I am.
It's good,
I'm still.
It?
It's I think it's one of those shows where, I tell you what, I'm getting a little bit... tired of though.
What's that name?
Just because, well, you know, because I obviously I'm the hunchback.
Give an actor
innit?
A job and they'll moan.
I'm not moaning about the job.
Come on.
Right, because like if you have it, you can Google it if you want to see what we look like both in and out of costume.
Yeah.
You are the handsome romantic lead.
Yeah.
Much loved by Japanese women.
Yeah.
Right.
You are the hunchback assistant.
I'm the hunchback assistant.
Bites dogs. Yeah.
And so, but I spent a lot of the show hunched, contorted,
yeah,
limping. On
character choice, though. I mean, you could have played Igor with a very straight back.
I could have done, but you know, committed. I'm bloody committed to it.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a little bit sick of everyone that sees the show. And when I come out of the stage door, it goes, "Is your back all right?"
First thing they say.
Literally, they either go, "Oh, you must be tired," or they go, "Oh, your back. Is your back all right?" Now I'm like. Look, I'm not claiming to be Anthony Sher, right? Right? I'm not claiming that.
Yeah.
Is it Sher or Sher?
Sher. Shergar. Sir Anthony Shergar.
Disappeared.
He's gone.
But it's Sher, isn't it?
Yeah.
If I could turn back time, gypsies, tramps and thieves.
If I could turn back time. That's how she sings it. Yeah.
Tow.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yes. I'm not claiming to be him.
Yeah.
With his, you know, extensive hunchbacking.
He's done a few hunchback roles, hasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he's the...
He's done them all. All the major hunchbacks.
All the major ones. Yeah. They, yeah. I think
he's done
should
Richard
be...
III, Notre Dame.
Has he?
He's no, done, I don't think he's done Notre Dame. He's definitely done Richard III.
What? Notre Dame? Oh,
Hunchback
no.
of.
Yes.
Hey, but, do you know what? There is a musical. Yes. Hunch. Come on, that's because, an easy stepping stone to continue your song and dance career, isn't it?
It would have to be, wouldn't it? Because it was called, if I'm not mistaken, it was called Notre Dame de Paris.
Yeah, what? Yeah.
And
yeah.
the only reason I know that, right, this yeah. is weird, isn't it? Look, you're the expert on the musicals.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
And
but...
I've come up with the... do you remember who was in it? The big star, the lady playing Esmeralda, because I do.
And was it Jane MacDonald?
You would think, wouldn't you? She'd be the go-to for, for
who was
the,
it?
The lover of a hunchback.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, Ms. MacDonald.
So sorry.
I'm so sorry. Like the first thing that I said was Jane MacDonald loves a hunchback. The thing is that when she's on board a vessel and it's rolling from side to side, she can steady herself on that hump.
Yeah.
And also place a small Casio keyboard on his back.
In case she wants a warm-up.
She wants, yeah. Maybe he's belt out a bit of Celine
Dion.
They
tend to be lower doors in ships and on things, don't they? So maybe she's, you know, maybe that's where they've come from. Slowly, she's become hunched herself.
It's like the...
Takes one to know one.
It's the reverse of the, you know, the ascent of man. It's the descent of man.
The descent of Jane.
It's just she's Jane's fully upright and then she gets further.
By the end of a cruise.
Yeah. She has. They have a rack. P&O have a special, a special performer's rack.
Who was it then in Notre Dame de Paris?
It was Danny Minogue.
That's right.
Yeah,
Dee Minogue.
Danny Minogue. She yeah. was at the Dominion Theatre.
There was a lyric from that show which has stayed with me. Men are fools. They're like stubborn mules. One of Don Black's finest.
Really? Oh, it's a Don Black, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I only remember that because I have I'm a keen Minogue enthusiast.
Both or just Danny?
Both Danny and Kylie.
Is there a third sister?
They keep her in a box.
It's like the woman in white.
They won't.
She's upstairs in the garret.
It's just this sort of like clawed hand that comes out. And I think Claude Hand was one of the characters in the show. It was Esmeralda and the innkeeper, Claude Hand.
I just want to talk about your early years as a performer. Because right. you know, you've become a song and dance man as we established.
I am a song and dance man now. I am,
well,
yes.
Now, and you know, for those of you who don't know, Ross is obviously a very successful stand-up comedian. We might get to sort of talking about some of the stand-up later, yeah, but I just want to talk about the earlier years.
I'll just put that down there.
Tatler Restaurant Guide 2018. Yeah, that sounds about right. Have you selected your evening meal?
Just trying to decide. I haven't decided yet.
Listen.
Right, go on.
You had a brief stint as a street juggler.
Yeah.
And aspired to join a circus. You joined a clown troupe and sold balloons as a stilt walker.
That's right.
Can I ask what you feel like this contributed in terms of, you know, the basics of performance? Is it having an impact now?
Well,
how did that all happen then?
Well, I was rubbish at school, terrible at school.
Right.
Dyslexic.
Right.
Can't write anything down. Terrible. Find real trouble reading and writing, right? So basically realised I wasn't going to get a job. You know, because I looked at people who had jobs and they spent a lot of time reading and writing. That's quite a... So I was going to be a stuntman. That was my first thing, because I thought I'll fall off stuff.
So what about the clown troupe?
So I started juggling because I wanted to join the circus, and that's how I thought, that's what I'll do. I'll just learn to juggle. I'll learn to ride a unicycle.
Because I've seen you juggle. You're a good juggler.
I'm quite a good juggler.
You are.
In fact, we've got a little bit in the show, haven't we?
Have we?
Yeah, when I do that thing where I throw that...
It's not really juggling, is it? That's just throwing a shovel around. Yeah. You can do five balls.
I can. Yeah.
You can.
I can. Yeah.
I can do three, but five's good.
But you're quite good yourself, so.
No, I'm not a pro juggler like yourself.
Well, you know, I used to wear woven pants as a child.
Does that make a difference?
Yeah. All the jugglers wear the woven pants.
Do they?
Yeah, terrible.
What does that give you as a juggler?
Just no self-esteem.
Right.
So I was going to join the circus, but then there was this fella. I used to go to this workshop, this juggling workshop, and it was... There was a fella who used to come to that and he sold balloons. He called himself Cornelius Cliff the Clown. And he came to this juggling workshop and he said, I'm looking for people to work for me at weekends who can do some juggling, do a bit of a show, and then sell balloons in like for most of the day.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to agricultural shows.
Sounds like a Thomas Hardy novel.
I was 14 at the time. I mean, my mum and dad went, yeah, you can go with this fella in a VW camper van that didn't lock from the, like, that was locked, that didn't open from the inside.
How did you get in it?
He had to let you in and out. So we were locked in this VW van and all the balloons that we didn't sell had to stay in the van. So you had to sit on the floor with all these helium balloons. So the upshot was, so we would sell balloons and then we would get to do a little show at the agricultural show.
This is the beginnings of the song and dance, really, isn't it?
In a way, yeah. But the thing about this fellow was he had a pioneering heart. He had a heart defect, right?
He had a balloon for a heart.
He used to breathe helium. It's really weird. That'd be lungs, wouldn't it? Anyway,
perfect for the gig, though.
So he had this like pioneering heart surgery where they'd put this new type of valve in, but they'd done it wrong. So the valve was the wrong way around. So
God, that's bad luck, isn't it?
No, but it wasn't, because they said to him, we can either... fix, like, it wasn't like a major thing, it was just a tiny thing. But what used to happen if his heart rate got too high, he had to lean forward,
perfect hunch,
to release the pressure in his like heart. So what would happen was and basically he got a load of money like compensation because it went wrong.
Yeah.
So that's what he used to set up this business selling balloons around agricultural shows, right? So me and my mate and this violinist.
What? Where'd the violinist come from?
He was a student that played the violin. And
why you blew up the balloons?
Yeah, he just sort of like...
Oh, wow. It got better, didn't it?
He juggled as well. And then...
with the violin? Or? Yeah.
Neil, I think his name was. So there was me, my mate Greg, who we were in a double act doing the juggling, and then the violinist, and then Cornelius Cliff and his wife, right? But what used to happen was... is that he would sometimes put his clown makeup on.
Right.
He would put the white bass on. Cornelius would put the white bass on, but he would frequently then get distracted by admin and not put the smile or anything. So there'd be this terrifying white-faced man blowing up balloons.
While someone juggled and someone else played the violin.
Yeah, and his wife used to go, put the rest of your makeup on. There was one day they started having this argument, because he was going, I'm putting it on in a minute. So there's a white-faced man, like, and his wife saying, you haven't put the... He's going, I know, I'm trying to do the balloon. And they started having this fight, right? But the trouble was, he got so angry that he would just go, don't you tell me what's... And he would stop and then have to touch his toes in order to
get... Like a timeout.
Yeah, in order to get the blood flowing.
So he didn't perish.
And then there was one time where there was the local paper had run a Cornelius Cliff colouring competition for the kids.
Yeah.
And his wife got so angry with him that she threw all of the colouring competitions off a cliff. It wasn't a big cliff.
Wait, what was his name again?
Cornelius Cliff.
Brilliant. It was written in the stars.
So it was more of a sort of sheer embankment, but
yeah, exactly.
She's known all that. So he came to us and he was just touching his toes. And he was going, lads, I've got to ask a favour, lads. And we're going, why are you touching your toes? He went, I'm furious. I'm so furious. And so we're like talking to him through his knees. And then he said, she's thrown all the kiddies' colouring competitions off the edge of this steep embankment.
Yeah.
Can you go down and get them?
So you had to.
So me, Cornelius, my mate and the violinist basically scaled down and were picking the kids' colouring competitions out of the bushes.
Yeah.
And then that, later on that day, we witnessed another argument between two of, there was this show that used to tour around these fairs and stuff called the Crazy Bears Roadshow. And they were like...
It's a different world then, wasn't it? When would this have been? What sort of year?
This would have been 1990, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, about that. And then, so the Crazy Bears Roadshow were like a knockoff Care Bears. And they used to come out and...
Sounds terrifying.
It was horrific. And they would come out on this... They had a trailer. They had, like, this big trailer with a, like, sort of caravan thing with a flop down front. And then they would come out and they would mime to, obviously, Teddy Bear by Elvis.
Yeah.
Teddy Bear's Picnic.
Yeah.
It's very much bear-themed.
Yeah.
And then... but then we were in the sort of dressing room bit because the Crazy Bears let us get changed in there. In the back of their carnival float or whatever you call
right.
it. And two of them, who were obviously in a relationship, had this massive fight. They were using the F and the C word quite a lot, but they were in costume. So they had big smiley bear faces on. F you, you F and C. Go and F yourself, you massive. F you with these big smiley faces. It was like, no. You F yourself, you're an absolute C. And then one of the, like, and then she defiantly turned and stormed out. But unlike, much like Jane McDonald's
on board,
low door, you went, well, you can go and F yourself, turn around, walked out, smashed the top of the bear head, landed on her arse.
Oh.
And then I just had to go F, and then she left.
So, now, in terms of a sort of formative experience, this made you fall in love with performing rather than turned you off. That's what I'm finding interesting here. You know, because I'm trying to get to the sort of foundations of the Ross Noble that we know today.
Right.
And this sort of turned you onto it rather than the other.
I couldn't believe it. As I was stood there.
As she fell on her ass, you thought, this is it. This is the world I want to be in.
I was covered in clothes that smelled paraffin from my fire torches.
Yeah.
So I was in paraffin-soaked clothes watching a swearing fallen bear on the floor. I just thought, I'm in showbiz.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so then where did the sort of transition to stand-up come along then?
Oh, that was because I won some tickets to see a show. Joe Brand, Jack D. Do you ever see Chris Lynham?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Chris Lynham, who he had hair like mine but gelled straight up.
Yeah.
And his finale would strip naked on stage, stick a firework up his arse, light it, and sing "There's No Business Like Show Business."
And you thought, I can't do better than that, but I'll have a go.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so I wanted to. It was so Jack D, Joe Brand, Chris Lynham, Simon Fanshawe, and Frank Sidebottom, all on the same bill. And I just watched that at 14 and went, "That's for me." And then that's when I started doing stand up. But
I've got a thing here that you appeared at your local comedy club at the age of 15.
Yes.
But they had licensing laws that prohibited you working there, so you had to leave through the kitchen.
That's right, yeah. But the licensing laws said that they were only allowed to do a comedy show, have live entertainment, if they served food. So when you went in, they would give you a paper plate, and some chili con carne.
Yeah.
And so they go, there's your rippy ticket, there's your chili con carne. And people go, I don't want chili con carne. So you have to.
That's quite a messy thing to have on a paper plate. They could have given you like a scotch egg or something.
Yeah, but it's expense, isn't it? It's just like chili con carne. It's one scoop, isn't it? You can make huge numbers at low cost, isn't it? It's sort of like...
Soup?
Sort of, could have done, I suppose, soup. I think soup's borderline though, isn't it? Is it a drink? Is it a?
Well, I see what you mean. Is it a beverage? Yeah.
So they basically give chili con carne, and then people just get it and then just put it aside and they get knocked on the floor. So my first gig, I just remember walking over a lot of meat to get to the stage. So
still sort of do to this day, and I think it's fair to say for those you probably all know who Ross is in that and. For the two of you who don't, who are listening because you've wanted
you're
to listen
Japanese
to me.
Japanese women, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be fair to say that,
Konnichiwa, by the way.
You've been voted the 10th best stand-up ever. Did you know that?
I did know that by the viewers
of
Channel 4's
best stand-ups ever in the world.
100 best stand-ups of all time.
That's pretty phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it was very... Yes, because, obviously, it's... it was a big Channel 4 show and they put it out to all the viewers and it was like... and that's in the world. That's of all time.
I know we've missed out a lot of your career there by going from walking over meat to the 10th best stand-up ever.
But, you know, people...
But the rest is just details, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. But, so that was it. I was voted 10th best stand-up... in the world, living and dead, right? A big thing, right? Big deal. It really put me right up there. They did it again 5 years later. I was knocked down to 11.
Who'd come in?
Well, Ricky Gervais, you see. He'd never done stand-up.
And then he
did the offers. He did some stand-up and people went, oh, no, he's...
He can do it.
Yeah, so I think he was like number... I think he was number 10 and I got moved to 11, which... but that's fine. I also, on the same programme... ran an online campaign encouraging people to vote for Tommy Trinder.
Did they?
Yeah.
And when did he come?
It was like 12th.
That's genius.
Something like that. And then they had to put a thing up saying, the last time we did this, he was 99, but due to an online campaign by Ross Noble, he is now up there at the top of the
What I hadn't realised, though, also, is that you've been here before. At the Garrick?
I have,
We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, oh, did I
know? Because we're in your dressing room here at the Garrick where we're doing Young Frankenstein, we should say that.
Yes.
52 performances in.
Yeah. Every night, delight in Japanese women.
You transferred your Unreal Time, is
that's
that
the one?
Yeah. From Edinburgh. Did you come straight from Edinburgh to here?
Yeah, yeah.
That's good, that, isn't it?
5 weeks, I think, I did here.
That's good, that.
Yeah.
In 2003?
Yeah, 2003, yeah.
Were you in this dressing room?
No, I was in Dame Leslie Joseph's dressing room, but it wasn't as nice as it is now. All of this is because of...
You remember when this was all fields?
It all fields, this. Yeah. You had to graze.
You were allowed to bring your own livestock.
Tour manager had to have a cowbell around his neck.
Right.
And in fact, this is the very theatre where I recorded my... Anyone that's a fan of my DVDs, my Unreal Time DVD was recorded in this very theatre.
See, there you go.
It all comes full circle, doesn't it?
Anyways, in episode one, we talked about, if you haven't listened to it, the fact that there are 850 Kenneth Branagh Theatre Company snow globes still knocking around the Garrick Theatre.
Yep.
And we put out a thing on Twitter saying, does anybody have any ideas about what we could do with them? Have we had any?
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Let's have a look at something.
Tim Cartwright, he says, stack them in a pile and yodel at them steadily increasing the pitch until they burst and form a snow globe tsunami. That's like an avalanche, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That's quite good.
That's not a bad
You're
idea.
You're a very high singer. I should think you'd have to
be higher than the human voice, I would imagine. You'd probably have to enlist the aid of some sort of animal, I would imagine, who can, you know, get right up into the sort of register that we can't hear.
Like a bat or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It says, how about setting up wigwam and selling them at cost price with the tagline... Oh, that's good. Set up a wigwam, selling them at cost price with the tagline, now is the winner of our discount tent.
Yeah, that's the winner, isn't it?
That's got to be it.
That's a really good effort.
That's Forgotty Cars, at Forgotty Cars, well done. What else has he said here? Pass them out... pass them out to people who don't have any coconuts to use. like as a sort of a survival thing.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of live off the snow itself instead of coconut, the flesh of a coconut.
You drink the thing.
Yeah. Because coconut water's sterile, isn't it?
I'm
not sure the snow globe water would be. Yeah, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, you can clean a wound with coconut water.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What about a bounty? Have you melted a bounty
into
it?
I've not tried that. As a poultice. Some sort of confectionery poultice.
3, 2, 1. That synced.
Got it.
Yeah.
So, Ross and I are just walking backstage through the Garrick Theatre, and now we've come out into the auditorium, Ross.
Yeah, we've got to try and get... Apparently, these snow globes are on the... They're up there, apparently.
What are we on? We're on the bottom floor, 1, 2, 3 flights up. We're on the hunt for the
Kenneth Branagh snow globes that, legend has it, are stashed in the balcony of the theatre.
Shall we ask the ushers?
Shall we ask the ushers if, how we can get right up the top?
Yeah.
We're just walking up to the back of the stalls now.
Hi, sorry to interrupt your lunch. We're doing our podcast and we're trying to find these hidden snow globes that apparently are on the top level.
In the gallery.
Do you know where they are? You know where they are?
It's true. The legend is true.
The legend is true. Wow.
How do we get up there?
Go all the way up the stairs from here.
Yeah.
Then go through the first right-hand door. Oh, shit, am I going to be quoted? Yeah. Then right to the top.
Where Kenneth Branagh's not going to kick off and go...
unless he comes back.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Or, you know, in 100 years' time when he dies and, you know, he's going to haunt you.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be up there. He'd just be going, where's my snow globes?
So we have to get all the way up to the top.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Right. Here we are.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that.
Hang on a minute. Oh, we've got to go around this way. So we've come out of the theatre now.
The theatre. Yeah.
And now we've got to go.
Some of the swings there just off for a run.
Hello, mate.
Oh, there's another one. Not off for a run.
Can we go this way?
I think it's this way, isn't it? Yeah, here we go.
Here we go.
In the circle.
So now we're in the dress circle. It's nice here, isn't it?
It's lovely, isn't it? Oh, imagine
this is where you'd want to sit, I think.
Yeah, probably.
And then,
we
go up to the next one.
Look at these. Oh.
Oh my word!
Look, there isn't even a knob on this door. Oh,
hang on a minute.
Hiya.
Hello.
Look at that.
Here we go.
Oh, there
we're
we
here.
Look at, holy moly!
We're on it. We're on the top level.
Could it literally be this straight
away? Is this
away?
It? Joe...
No, peanut...
No, that's peanut butter.
Peanut butter? In a theatre?
There's a consignment of peanut butter. Maybe it's rat bait. There's a lot of rodents in theatres.
What, and that's...
I don't know.
No, popcorn?
Popcorn. That'll be popcorn. What about in there, look?
Do they cook? Oh, hang on.
Hang on a second.
What's this?
Unmarked.
Plain white band.
Come on.
It is.
No,
it's cups. That's
it's paper polystyrene cups.
It's not that giant one over there, is it?
Let's have a look. No, I don't think so. That's.
So this is. People used to sit up here.
Hang on a minute.
Is that them?
No.
No, it's tape.
That's beer mats.
I mean, this is for the.
There's a Christmas tree.
Oh, look at that.
Very festive.
Christmas tree there.
Imagine sitting all the way up here.
Wow. You
wouldn't be able to see anything.
This used to be the.
This was the balcony, I suppose, the cheap seats, was it?
Yeah, and the,
I mean, that's... You can't see much of the stage, can you,
I mean,
really?
At the York Opera House, here's an interesting bit of theatre trivia for you.
Yeah.
At the York Opera House, they had to put up vanity boards on the very highest level because from the stage, the actors could see up people's skirts.
Perk of the job.
Well, exactly. That's why... So why a lot of us come into this business. Right, hang on, what's this over here? So what?
I don't think it's going to be there. No, I think it's going to be over the other side.
Oh, hang on, what are these things here?
Hmm?
Boxes. No?
No, I think it's over the other side. Hang on a second.
Oh, this looks
it's got to be this, hasn't it?
It's got to be. Are they heavy? All right, there we go. No, it's more popcorn. What about this box here?
Hello, guys.
Yeah, we thought we'd just come up here and do a bit.
We're on. Switch? Are we gonna do
if you want to, it's quite high, isn't it? Oh, has he got it? Have you heard legend of Kenneth Branagh's 100 snow globes? How have you got it? 800 snow, I think.
It says on the box, I'm not being rude, it says made in China.
Brilliant. And there's snow on them.
Kenneth Branagh Theatre Company.
Yes!
Commemorative snow globes.
Yes! How many boxes?
There's loads. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
8, 9, 10, 11.
Shit.
12
the
boxes of, I'd say, at least maybe a dozen a box.
Wow.
I need to see this.
Did you, have you guys not heard about the legend of the snow globes?
Oh, you've never heard. This is. Yeah, look.
Can I have a snow globe? Are they,
open that up.
Do they need
open
to
it up.
Open it up and
open
describe
up
to
what
us.
What's your name?
What is Elspeth? Hello.
Hi, Elspeth. Elspeth's just opening up one of the commemorative boxes.
Oh, it's taped. Should I...
No, yeah, open go it ahead. Up, rip no, it open. And... Branna wouldn't mind.
We were led to believe there was 850.
Yeah.
I think that's what the starting number was. We were trying to sell them off for, like, 30 quid.
Wow. And now, a knockdown price of...
I need a blade.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's ironic, isn't it? Because literally everyone dressed in black has got a Leatherman on there. On there.
Oh, hello. Hello.
Here it
are
comes. Here it comes.
What is that? It says, plays at the Garrick.
There you go. Turn it round. Look what it is at the front.
It's hard to see because of the... Oh, it's the theatre.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's real cute.
I suggest we bring all of these to my dressing room before they get stolen.
I don't think... I mean, your dressing room's big, but... That's going to take up a bit of room.
Oh, shit.
Well, that's certainly... I mean, I need one, obviously.
Take one, and take one for a prize.
I'm going to take this, by the way. Is that okay?
Elspeth, it's yours. You're welcome
that's
to
that's between you and your conscience, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, I'm getting myself... I'll get a box.
Have a little look. Are you going to take a box?
Yeah.
Are they heavy?
Yeah. Come on, let's have a box.
You want
no, we're all right, darling. Thank you. Back. One box each will do.
For now...
So now we're outside in the courtyard of the Garrick Theatre. Do you think the trip was a success?
Oh, you know what? I could not be more excited. I think this is how pirates feel. You know what we should have done?
What's that?
Right, what we should have done is we should have used your pass to the Poirot premiere.
Which I didn't get, but anyways.
How could you not have been invited to the movie you're starring in?
Because, you know, the mere mortals don't get invited.
You're in the film.
You get invited to the cast and crew screening. I'm not joking. That's on 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning.
No, 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 surely not.
No, that's true. I could have gone to that one, but I didn't have the budget to.
You were... No. So it's at the Albert Hall.
Yeah.
You're in the film.
Yeah.
You've carried a spear next to Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The spear carriers, we get a preview showing almost. It's very lovely. You get to see all the cast and crew and everything. Like, I'm not moaning too much.
Oh, no, I'm not having that.
Yeah, I know, but you go to fancy dinners and that.
I'm not having it. If you're on the screen, you've got a line in it.
Yeah.
What do you see?
I literally can't remember.
Well, what was the...
Here's your bag, Mr. Poirot, I imagine.
Right.
Yeah.
So Poirot comes in.
We're in North Africa somewhere. We shot it in Malta.
Right.
Which is lovely, by the way.
Yeah, Game of Thrones they do there.
Yeah, they shoot a lot out there, actually. Yeah. At the top of some sort of old fortress, I suppose we were.
Right.
And... Honestly, that's all I sort of can remember. It was me carrying his bags and saying, "Off you go. Where are you going to?" That's right. Are you going back to London or something? I said.
Mr. Poirot or Detective Poirot?
I can't remember. Sir, probably.
Are you going back to London, sir?
Yeah.
Right.
I think something
and
like
then
that.
What does he say to you?
He says something about being able to look into people's faces and know what they're up to. Something like that. I know there's a bit more to the scene, but he basically is setting him up as the brilliant detective that he is.
Oh, so you are literally right at the start.
I think so, yeah.
But if he was that good a detective, surely he would have looked at you and gone, "Yes, I am going back to London. I never said anything. I know. I am a brilliant detective, a good detective." That is what you were going to say.
It's a really unsatisfying film because he'd have to do that in every scene. You say it.
That'd be great. If he walked in the room and he went, "He's a murderer." Anyway.
End of film.
Yeah, it's him.
Anyways, that brings me on to something.
Well, hang on, sorry. Just what we could have done is we could have used your velvet rope invite to the premiere, right? We could have sneaked in.
The snow globes.
We could have had all of the people, like all outside... Ken, can you also... "Sir Ken, could you sign this for me, please?" And at the last minute, he thinks it's just like a, you know, like a Wallander lunchbox or something.
Yeah.
And then at the last
They're
minute...
Very popular.
The Wallander merch went through the roof.
Kids are going nuts for him.
There's another theatre on the other side of town. It's all just unsold Kenneth Branagh merchandise like that. "Oh, what's that you've got there? It's a Dead Again stunt kite."
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Musical of the week.
Last week we took in one of the sort of big, you know, big musicals of the 1980s. It was one of the canon, I suppose, of Andrew Lloyd Webber's output. We did Starlight Express.
Yeah.
This is another, I think it originally was in the 80s, as a made for television film in the US.
Right.
If I say to you, she was a showgirl. No, her name was, what is it?
Her name was Lola.
Yeah, she was a showgirl.
Copacabana.
Yes.
Copacabana,
the Barry Manilow musical, right?
Wowzers.
Yeah, it started off in the States as a made-for-television film, and this is a brilliant bit of just a slight sidetrack. It was written by James Lipton.
No.
Yeah.
What, from inside the actor's studio?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Anyways.
So is this what we would deem a jukebox musical?
I suppose you would, yeah, because it had all of Barry's music in it. I don't know if it was music written previous to the show or whether they had Copacabana, the song, and then they wrote other ones around it.
Because you say, I'm slightly... Because what's your feeling on this, right? Because
about Barry or...?
Because Ben Elton, obviously, is the king of...
The jukebox musical?
They've taken the Queen, taken...
The Rod Stewart.
What are you, Bad Out of Hell, that's out at the moment, isn't it? You
know? Well, I mean, it's Mamma Mia, isn't there? There's a lot of them. Jersey Boys. Jersey Boys is a particularly fine example, actually, I think. Very good scripts.
But then again, that's specifically about the people who made...
Is the thing, isn't it? I mean, there are sort of jukebox musicals and jukebox musicals. Some chart the sort of story of the people who were in the band, like Jersey Boys did.
Buddy,
some of them
wonderful.
Have completely self-contained...
Buddy. Wonderful.
But he's still going, you know.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's back out on tour in the States at the moment.
I've seen it twice.
I love it. It's brilliant.
It's really good. Would you ever play Buddy? You play the guitar? You can.
I don't know if I would.
You've got glasses? Not for you?
No, not for me. I don't know, maybe. Never say never.
After, wouldn't it? That bit doing the concert in the second half there.
Well, yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways,
Copacabana.
Right, starring Gary Wilmot.
No.
Yeah.
What,
G. Wilmot.
The stage one.
So here we go. Story. The show opens in a dreamlike sequence. I've got this off guidetomusicaltheatre.com. Thank you for whoever has done the homework here.
Brilliant. Wilmot. Safe hands with Wilmot.
You know where you are, don't you?
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Palladium, was it?
No, Liverpool Empire.
Oh, wow, there
you
go.
I was on tour at the time. Boom. Steered the car.
He's pro. The car didn't crash.
Honestly, when that car went up, there's some people you think, not really sure.
Yeah.
Martin Kemp, you'd think, maybe he's not. You know?
But with Gary, you know he'd reverse park that.
Exactly.
Very nicely.
Safe pair of hands. Yeah. Wilmot, that's what they call him.
The show opens with a brilliant dream. It's not brilliant. That doesn't exist there. With a dreamlike sequence set in an elegant but otherworldly nightclub circa 1940.
Oh.
Act one. Stephen, brackets Gary Wilmot, is a songwriter suffering writer's block. He also acts as narrator, but also becomes part of his imaginary settings and as a character in his forthcoming musical, that of leading man Tony. So there's
Hang on a sec. So Gary Wilmot, Stephen...
And Stephen is Tony.
Right.
All right?
Yes, I'm with you.
There's layers.
Yes.
Stephen's wife, Samantha...
Right.
...reminds him that their parents are coming for dinner, which momentarily takes Stephen away from his imaginary world.
Hang on. Stephen Tony's wife...
Yeah.
His wife reminds him that their...
As Stephen. Yeah.
...that their parents...
Her parents. Oh, it's just their parents.
Because that's...
Well, that's a bit much, isn't it?
Because it's fine if it was like... But hang on, is it Gary's parents, Stephen's parents, or Tony?
I think it's Samantha's.
Samantha's parents are coming.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
I think so.
That's fine.
Not
there's,
sure.
There's nothing incestual about
if your,
that.
If your wife said to you, right, my folks are coming over.
Yeah.
I know you've got writer's block, but, you know, we've got to, you know, prepare for their arrival.
Yeah.
What would you turn to first?
Well, I mean, part of
either
me,
to distract yourself or to prepare.
I mean, for me, I would sort of think, I'm sat here,
yeah,
right? I'm in my writer's room as yeah. Gary. No,
as Stephen.
Stephen.
He's not Tony yet, I don't
right,
think.
Right, yeah. So Stephen's there. He's thinking, oh, because he's staring at a blank page. I've got writer's block.
Yeah.
If it was me, I mean, it depends if he had a, we don't know if he's got a deadline, but surely he would be thinking, her parents are coming round. That's going to free up my mind.
Yeah.
It's going to, that could
the fire a few synapses.
Fire something. The dad might, you know, he might be like a traction engine
driver
or an enthusiast,
engineer?
Steam fare
yeah.
enthusiast. He doesn't know. He's like, oh, there's, I've got a new steam driven baler. And he goes,
I could write a song about
and he
it.
Thinks, hang on a second. And he just starts, and he goes like this. He goes,
and that's where it starts.
And it starts.
Do you know, it's interesting you've come up with that. Because guess what happens in Copacabana, the musical? He turns to his drum machine as he begins to visualise the way his musical is going to take shape.
Right. Obviously, I went traction engine.
Yeah.
But drum machine. So, yeah. So, sorry. So what does he do? So, that's what he does?
That's what he does.
Oh, right. Okay.
She goes, Stephen, my parents are coming over.
Yeah.
He goes, drum machine.
Yeah. But hang on, so he's had the drum machine the whole time.
I presume so.
And he's never thought, I'll turn that on and see what starts.
I guess not.
See if a samba beat comes out of it.
Anyway,
right.
He sees how his musical is going to take shape. It will be about a showgirl performing at the famous Copacabana in 1947.
Right.
Fair dues.
Yeah.
We are whisked to Grand Central Station where his heroine is about to arrive. Her name is Lola.
Hang on. In Grand Central Station... New York.
You presume so, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Was Copacabana in...
It's not in New York, is it?
Where is it?
Oh, is it in New York?
Well, I don't know. We'll find out. Her name is Lola and she hails from Tulsa, Oklahoma. She's not alone.
Oh, no, sorry. I'm thinking of Club Tropicana.
Yes. Where's that?
I don't know, but the drinks are free.
Wherever it is.
It closed down after 6 months. It's like the manager.
Gordon Ramsay came in, tried to save it.
He's going, what are you doing, George? Like, Andrew Ridgely's there. Just go, we don't need a till. He's going, come on.
There needs to be some income.
There has to be a revenue stream. Yeah. And Ridgely
people can pay for
just,
it in song. No, yeah, that's not going to work.
It's not. Yeah.
She's not alone. There are other would-be showgirls from St. Paul or Fargo or Billing.
Billing?
Billing. Where's Billing?
What, not the Billing Aquadrome near Northampton?
Maybe.
Is that what it...
Could be.
Yeah, you know the Billing Aquadrome? You see the sign on the M1?
Yeah.
Yeah.
People have turned up to New York from Billing, Northampton.
From Billing Aquadrome.
Dreaming of being on the Great White Way.
Grew up in a caravan.
Together they marched down glittering, glorious Broadway.
Oh, right, okay.
Presumably from Northampton. There's nothing like this in Northamptonshire. Back to the 1990s and Stephen's musical is beginning to take shape. His leading man will be called Tony, a songwriter by day. This is getting quite confusing and layered, isn't it? A songwriter by day, and at night he works in the famous Copacabana nightclub.
Right.
Stephen becomes Tony, and then it's showtime. Tony and the Copa Boys lead the entertainment before...
Sorry, I'll stop you there. The Copa Boys?
Yeah, not sure about... Doesn't say much more about them. But they lead the entertainment before introducing the fabulous Copa Girls.
Of course.
Because if you've got Copa Boys, you've got to have Copa Girls.
It's all about the equal...
Sexual equality.
Yeah, exactly.
After the show, Tony commiserates with Gladys.
Gladys.
A worldly wise cigarette girl about the less glamorous side of show business.
Oh.
Lola enters looking for...
She's clearly never seen two care bears fighting in a trailer. Poncing around in a fancy nightclub. Come on, love. Until you've been in a hedge... trying to pick up a load of children's colouring competitions with a clown with a defective heart. don't start with me about the underside of Shoreby. Anyway, sorry, so Gladys.
Positively glamorous.
The cigarette girl.
Lola enters looking for a job, and Tony, Gary, is immediately head over in heels in love. He would be. He and Gladys persuade Sam Silver, the Copa's hard-headed owner, to give Lola the chance to audition for the show the following afternoon. Tony is desperate to have his songs published and auditions them. There's a lot of auditions for music publishers.
Auditions music publishers?
Auditions his songs for music publishers.
Oh, I see, yes. Yeah.
While Lola does the rounds of theatre producers, they both arrive at the Copa tired and exhausted, Lola fully expecting to fail this audition also. People who audition for the Copa are expected to arrive with their own pianist.
Right.
But Tony comes to the rescue and together with Gladys transform Lola and her song into star material. So that, that was convenient, wasn't it, Ross?
Yeah.
Lola gets the job at the Copa, and she and Tony obviously hit it off. Tony hadn't reckoned, however, with the arrival of Rico.
Oh,
I like this guy. The local godfather and his goons.
Oh, brilliant. Now, already, I don't know if you're doing this, but, like, I
can see them all.
Like, you're casting it in your head, right? Clearly, you would be cast as the Gary Wilmot part.
Hadley Fraser as Gary Wilmot, as Stephen, as yes. Tony. Do you think you'd be Sam Silver, the hard-headed? Or would you prefer to be Rico?
No, I'd be
Gladys.
I'd be the head of the goons. That's who I'd be.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I'd be one of... In fact, I would play all of the goons with... It would be me in the middle, and then I would have broomsticks with puppets of the other goons...
That would be good. I wonder if they had a song.
Unless it was Peter Sellers, Harry Seacombe, and Spike Milligan.
I don't think they've got a song by the looks of it.
Oh, okay, I'm not having that then. Yeah, I'll be Sam Silver then.
Yeah. Right, okay. Rico takes a shine to Lola and invites her to his table for champagne. She tells her of his own magnificent nightclub, the Tropicana in Havana.
Ah.
The world's largest outdoor nightclub. That's how he's selling it.
This nightclub you got? It is the biggest. It's the biggest outdoor nightclub. Is it a field?
No.
He's definitely a nightclub.
Is it just a beach?
No, he's definitely a nightclub. Is it a bit of waste ground with some with some lager in a fire? No, he's a nightclub. How many times have I got to tell you this?
Is it a reclaimed landfill?
No. He's a nightclub. He's the biggest nightclub. Outdoor nightclub in the world.
Persuasion by word doesn't get Lola to come to Rico's nightclub, but a drugged drink means he can kidnap her and transport her to Havana on his ocean clipper.
Oh, my God.
Maybe he's borrowed it from Rod. And thence to his opulent lair in Cuba.
Oh, my God.
Goodness gracious.
Come on. So
it started off with Gary, Stephen, Tony in his house with his drum machine.
Yeah.
With the parents coming. And now we're...
Hang on, what happened to the parents?
I don't know.
So, like, the parents are, Lola, she's been drugged and put on a clipper?
Yeah.
So he's kidnapped.
He's drugged her.
He's kidnapped
her. Kidnapped her and taken her to his opulent lair in Cuba.
Oh, my God.
And that's the end of Act 1.
Right,
that's
course.
A good way to end Act 1, isn't
it? Yeah. And is there a big... What's the big number?
I'm not sure.
Does he have a big number?
Wouldn't be
the drowsy clipper or something.
Oh, I like this one. It doesn't say it's got a list of musical numbers here, but they don't seem to say where they would come in the show. There's one called "Ay Caramba" by the Copa Girls.
Okay,
I like the sound of that. El Bravo, Lola and the Pirates. Don't know where they've come from. Well, maybe off the clipper.
Tell us about Act 2, and then we'll go through the. Yeah, they must surely the clipper's on the way, and the pirates kidnap her or something like. Is it like? Captain Phillips, the musical.
I am the captain now. That'd be the big number.
Who is the captain?
I am the captain now.
Who is the captain? Who is? You is. Who is you? I am the captain now.
Hey! Act 2.
Right.
Realisation dawns that Lola's been kidnapped.
Right, yes.
Tony vows to rescue her with the aid of Willie, one of the Copa's waiters.
Who owns a boat?
Presumably.
Right.
Sam Silver also offers to help, but vacillates between his desire to help and his fear of Rico's machine guns.
Oh,
wow. Maybe he's come a cropper before.
Rico's machine.
Presume the goons maybe have all got one.
Is Rico, is this just a massive fire engine?
No, he's a nightclub.
He's a nightclub. Why is the target set up?
He is a nightclub. How many times have I got to tell
you? Meanwhile, in Havana, Lola is coming round from her drug-induced sleep.
Oh my God.
Conchita, Rico's mole. Mole, sorry, not mole.
Ratty, badger, and Rico's mole.
Conchita, Rico's mole, and the one ousted from favour by Lola, puts Lola firmly in the picture, and a plan to help Lola escape begins to take shape. Not sure whether she's pro-Lola or...
Pro-Lola. I think that's a medical conflict.
I've got pro-Lola. Oh,
it's terrible. My spleen, it's pro-Lola.
Contact your doctor to see if pro-Lola is right for you. Conchita returns to the Tropicana to rehearse her number for the show that evening, and Rico decides that they should revive one of Conchita's past hits, which might be Welcome to Havana, Conchita and the Trop Boys.
Right.
Now
they're called the Trop Boys. They were the Copa Boys.
Yeah, that's because it's a different nightclub.
Oh, sorry, yes, you're right. Yes, that's right, yes, they're, sorry.
The Tropicana sorry. Is the biggest outdoor yes, nightclub, outdoor and it's nightclub, in Havana.
Yes.
Only this time it's to star Lola. Conchita is furious, and despite her protestations, Rico is firm in his decision.
Right.
So Conchita's out, Lola's in.
Is she recovered from the drugging?
I presume so.
She must be a bit drowsy.
Yeah.
I don't operate any heavy machine guns. They got one of those, you know, those big ones that are like...
No wonder Sam Silver's afraid of them.
Yes,
they get people on medication to fire them. Right, more than ever, Conchita decides that Lola must escape. So she is pro-Lola.
Right, okay.
Sam and Tony have by this time arrived in disguise.
Oh, brilliant.
It doesn't say what disguise, though.
Pantomime horse, probably. Excuse me, why is this horse? It is always here.
This part of the nightclub.
But at the other nightclub, you can't bring livestock in.
And seek Conchita's help, as you would. Because
yeah.
During the big Tropicana production number,
right, yes.
Lola's escape is engineered and she and Tony finally melt into each other's arms.
I think
that's metaphorically.
Yeah.
Thus, the fantasy is over and Tony becomes once again Stephen.
Oh, I forgot. I completely forgot.
Wait for this, though.
Oh, my God.
Stephen is dejected now that his fantasy has been completed, and it is then that he realises that his fictitious Lola is none other than his wife, Samantha. All ends happily.
What? Where did Samantha... Oh, she's with the parents.
I don't know where the parents are, but Lola, the girl who he was in love with as Tony in his fantasy musical world, turns out... to be Samantha, his wife.
Oh, so hang on. So he sat there with his drum machine.
Yeah.
And you never see them. So she's shouting through the door, Stephen, Gary, are you, parents are coming. Oh, I'm just boom, 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 boom. I'm just on my drum machine, trying some tom-toms.
Yeah.
And she's like, come on. They're coming round.
Got to get
them. I'll be there in a minute.
Yeah.
And then it starts. So you never... that's the reveal, isn't it?
Presume so,
so
yeah.
So then she comes in.
Presumably played by the same actress.
The actress, but now she's just got like an apron on. Like
presumably,
she's preparing.
Yeah.
Marigolds or something.
Yeah.
And, oh, but here's the twist, right?
What's
the,
that?
The parents turn up.
And it's Rico.
It's Rico and the goons. And they go...
it's Rico and, then, and the horse.
And then, yeah, Rico on the horse with a load of mischievous weasels.
Anyway, so that's Copacabana.
That's amazing.
Well, if there's a meta, because last time we were talking about how Starlight Express is about the rejection of organized religion or faith or authority.
Yeah.
What do you get from Copacabana?
Well, I think it's about living your dreams,
yeah.
But also realizing that sometimes the very thing that you dream of
is the thing that you've already got.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's quite profound, that,
I
isn't
think
it?
That's, yeah.
That's profound from Barry.
I mean, that's
it?
The thing, you know, like Wilmot's not going to do something unless it's got that...
unless it's got a profound...
subtext in it, is he?
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't even get him through the door. So, like, yeah, I think that's what it is. I think it's about, and also about the dangers of Rohypnol.
Yeah, very true.
You know?
Yeah. Watch out for that.
Yeah.
Copacabana.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Is that due for a reboot anytime soon?
I don't think so.
No, that's good. I can feel
you feel the love for musical theatre growing inside you?
I can see my musical theatre, just my knowledge. Because now, like, you know, like tonight after the show,
yeah,
you know, you'll be off, kiss a few Japanese women in
off we
night.
Go, yeah.
I'll be down Joe Allen's.
Chatting about Copacabana. Will you just sort of drop it into conversation? You know, like someone talking about a show and you go, that reminds me of.
100%.
Did you ever see?
I'll wait till Wilmot's mentioned.
Yeah.
Because it's bound to happen. Somebody passing, you know. I don't know what he's... he's probably doing something at the moment, isn't he? And he's like, Wilmot. And I go, sorry, you talking about Gary? And they go, yeah, we're talking about Gary. And I'll say, yes. I tell you what, never finer than Copacabana. His Frankenstein and
into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.